Man, you can be seated. Good morning, everybody. For the last couple of months, we have been in the season of Lent, and now we are in the season of Easter, or it's sometimes called Eastertide. And that's because last Sunday, we celebrated that Jesus rose from the grave on Easter. And for the next 6 weeks, we're going to ask the question, so what? What does that actually mean? How does that change our lives? How does the resurrection make a difference in our lives? So we're going to read some stories from the Bible that happened after the resurrection, and also some passages from the New Testament about what it means, what Easter means for followers of Jesus. The reality is, after Jesus rose from the dead, he appeared to his disciples, and it didn't seem to actually change anything in their lives right away. In fact, Jesus told them, he said, meet me in Galilee, and then I'm going to give you some instructions, and we're going to go out and change the world. And so the disciples met Jesus in Galilee, and Matthew says this: when they saw Jesus, they worshiped him, but some doubted. Some doubted. These guys have seen Jesus die and rise from the grave, and some of them still doubt who he is and what he can do. Now, that actually shouldn't surprise us very much, because as humans, no matter what we see or experience, we are doubting creatures. We inherently have doubts. Some of us are doubters whenever it comes to good news. Whenever you hear good news, you just think it's too good to be true, and you just doubt that good news. Some of us are doubters when it comes to any claims of certainty. Whenever anyone sounds certain about anything or sure of anything, that raises suspicions for you. In fact, religious people or church people are especially like this. Whenever you hear someone who just sounds so certain about what is right and what is wrong and how you should be living your life, right? We don't usually like that. We don't like politicians who are this way either, right? They seem so absolute, so certain that everything they're saying is true. Every promise they make, they're going to keep, and the other party is terrible and all that. And it's almost like the more certain people sound, the more suspicious we get. Now, some of us are just doubters by nature. We are just naturally, our personality is wired that way. You doubt everything. Nothing can be trusted. Nobody can be trusted, right? Because everybody will eventually hurt you or leave you or let you down in the end. And you're just one of those natural doubters. So when it says that after Jesus rose from the grave, some of his followers still doubted, right? That shouldn't surprise us. I'm guessing some of us would have been in the doubting group. Now, there's one disciple that epitomizes this tendency that we all have. When Jesus first appeared to his followers on that Easter Sunday, we're told that they were overwhelmed with joy when they first saw him, except for one disciple who was not there. Here's what John says. Now, Thomas, also known as Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." So apparently, Thomas was not there that first Sunday night when Jesus showed up to his disciples. We don't know where he was. He apparently was still in Jerusalem, but he just wasn't there hanging out with the disciples that night. But later on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, sometime that week, he reconnects with the other disciples and they tell him, "We have seen Jesus." And the way the wording is used in the Greek, it actually means ongoing action. Like they kept telling him, they didn't just tell him once, but they kept telling him over and over and over, "Dude, we've seen Jesus with our own eyes. Like it's real. The rumors are true. He really did rise from the grave." But look at how Thomas responds. "But he said to them, 'Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, and I put my fingers where the nails were, and I put my hand into his side,'" because remember when Jesus was on the cross, one of the Roman soldiers speared him in the side, "unless I put my hand into his side, I will not believe." Thomas is saying, "I don't buy it. I don't think you guys know what you're talking about. I think you made this all up. I think you're buying a lie or somebody else has tricked you. I don't know what it is, but unless I actually see his flesh and see the wounds and put my fingers in his hand and my hand in his side, I will not believe. And that last phrase in the Greek, he actually uses two negatives there. So it's even stronger. It's like, I certainly will not believe. I definitely won't believe. I will never believe unless I have proof. Now, I'm going to be honest. I am thankful for Thomas. I think Thomas was probably a right brain, sort of analytical, engineering, sort of scientific kind of thinker. And I think he's saying, this doesn't make any sense. It doesn't seem possible. We saw him die. Like, there's no way he's alive again. I need some proof. And it's not just that I identify with Thomas back then. It's that I identify with Thomas now. I have doubts too. I'm a pastor, right? So I'm supposed to be like super professional Christian. But I still have significant doubts when it comes to God or Jesus or the Bible or faith. Sometimes I doubt that God hears my prayers. I'll pray or I'll ask God to do something, and then I'll play this little mind game. I don't know if you guys do this, but I'll play this mind game. If you really heard this and you really care, then you will answer it in a very tangible, specific way so that I will know. And basically what I'm saying is, I need to see the nail marks. I need proof to know that you hear this. Sometimes I doubt some of the stories in the Bible are true. Sometimes I doubt that God actually loves me or still forgives me over and over and over. Sometimes I doubt that God even knows what he's doing in the world, right? Because there's a lot of problems in our world. And how could God keep letting this happen? Sometimes I just doubt God even exists. I took a graduate level class a few years ago in psychology, and we read this book by Sigmund Freud called The Future of an Illusion. And the entire book is how religious belief is simply an illusion, how religious people basically have created God in our minds because we have these misplaced desires and instincts from our childhood where we weren't loved very well. And the way we cope with all of these things is to create a God who is like a loving father. But it's not real. It's just an illusion. And as flawed as Freud's thinking is at times, sometimes I wonder, could he be right? Is it possible that we're just making all of it up? I mean, is the good news that God loves each one of us unconditionally, is it just too good to be true? Is the good news that Jesus rose from the grave, is it too good to be true? You see, if I had been one of the disciples, I think I would have been Thomas. Maybe you would have too. But look at what happens next. John tells us this. A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." So it's a week later. It's Sunday again. And the disciples are gathered again. And by the way, this is where the custom begins of the followers of Jesus gathering on Sundays to celebrate and remember Jesus rising from the dead. It's something we're still doing 2,000 years later. So they're in this house in Jerusalem. And who is there? This is a really important question. Is it only the people who are there who believe in the resurrection? Is it only the people who are there who have really strong faith? Is it only committed disciples who are there? No. They're all meeting together, and Thomas is there. Thomas the skeptic. Thomas the doubter. Thomas the guy who's basically looking at everybody else and thinking, like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. I don't know why you think Jesus is still alive. You're going to have to show me the evidence before I'm ever going to believe it, because I don't believe what you guys are saying. Thomas is there. And I love that, because I think that's what the church should look like. The community of faith should have people in it who don't have a lot of faith. So they're there in this house. The doors are locked. They're probably afraid of the Roman authorities still. And suddenly they're praying together maybe, or they're singing together. We don't know what they're actually doing, but suddenly Jesus just appears. And think about it for a second. The disciples have been telling Thomas over and over and over all week, no, Jesus really is alive. We're telling you, we've seen him. He really is alive. You've got to believe it. And Thomas has been saying to them over and over and over, I don't know what you guys are thinking. You guys are crazy. Maybe you guys were high that night. I don't know what is going on, but Jesus suddenly shows up in their midst. And you've got to think that the disciples are thinking, boom, booyah, there he is. We told you, Thomas, right? Like, how do you like them apples, Thomas? You got to think they somehow are wanting to rub it into Thomas. I don't know. I would have rubbed it in if I was one of the disciples. But Thomas is standing there, and you got to think they look at Thomas, and they're wondering what he's thinking. And then they begin looking at Jesus. How is Jesus going to deal with Thomas? Is Jesus going to rebuke him? Is he going to scold him for not having enough faith? Is he going to say, Thomas, I gave you one test to see if you would pass, and you didn't pass the test? Or maybe Jesus will walk up to Thomas, he'll put his arm around him, and he'll say, you know what, Thomas, I'm not mad at you. I'm just really disappointed, right? What's Jesus going to do? Let's take a look. Then he said to Thomas, put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. See, Jesus already knows Thomas's doubts. He knows exactly what Thomas has been thinking, what Thomas has been feeling, what Thomas has been processing. He knew what Thomas was wrestling with. And then Jesus met him in those doubts. He doesn't criticize him. He doesn't berate him, right? Jesus doesn't say, man, your doubts have been totally invalid. They're crazy. Your faith is so immature. Thomas, you followed me for 3 years. You saw all of the amazing things I can do. How can you still not believe? Thomas, if you're going to be one of my followers, just so you know, from here on out, you can't be doing stuff like this. You got to believe. No, Jesus just knows Thomas's doubts. He meets him in his doubts, and he basically says, okay, you need to see my hands, come take a look. You need to put your fingers there. You want to put your hand in my side? If that's what it takes for you, Thomas, if that's what you need, I'll give you that opportunity. And then Jesus says this. He says, stop doubting and believe. Now, one thing to remember is we're reading an English translation. These works were originally written in Greek. And there's something really significant I want to point out. Jesus does not actually use the word doubt here. He doesn't literally say, stop doubting or don't have any doubts, Thomas. Jesus uses the Greek word for unbelief here. So a more literal translation would be this. Stop continuing in your unbelief and start believing. Which is Jesus' way of saying, here, if you need the evidence, I'll give you some evidence. I'll give you evidence to help you begin to believe. But by the way, Thomas, it's not always going to be that way, right? You're not always going to get the evidence, and you're always going to have doubts. And you know what faith is? Faith is going to be pushing through those doubts. It's to believe in the face of those doubts. Faith is to trust even when you don't have all of the evidence to overturn your doubts. Because if you had all of the evidence all of the time, then it wouldn't really be called faith. Now, would it? That would be called certainty. But not once does Jesus ever say, you know what I really need from you guys? I need certainty. You know what I really want is certainty. Not once does Jesus ever say, ye of little certainty, right? Jesus is always encouraging and pushing and challenging them and us towards faith. But faith is only real and faith is only exercised when you actually have doubts. It is actually lived out in the presence of doubts. Faith assumes doubt. Now, let me tell you what faith is not. Faith is not certainty or the absence of doubt. See, when we equate faith with certainty, you know what we do? We actually turn certainty into an idol that we worship. And maybe that's why some religious people rub you the wrong way, right? Because what they've done is they've turned certainty into an idol, into the highest virtue, into the supreme test of somebody's faith, which then means any questions we have or any doubts we have or any skepticism we have are enemies of faith. But when we turn certainty into this kind of idol, a couple of things happen. First, we become rigid and close-minded and inflexible and judgmental towards anyone who doesn't have the same level of certainty that we have. But second, and this is probably even more significant, it means we don't actually have the kind of faith that can deal with real questions and real doubts when they do inevitably arise. See, faith is not about certainty or the absence of doubt. Well, let me tell you what faith is. Here's how the Bible describes faith. Faith is committing to an action in the face of uncertainty and doubt. Faith is recognizing I still have uncertainty or I still have some doubts and being willing to then push through that and commit to an action or an attitude or a posture or a way of life. In other places, the Bible uses the words confidence or conviction when it talks about faith, but never the idea of certainty. Which is why Jesus basically says to Thomas, I know your doubts, and I'll meet you in your doubts, but I'm also going to push you to push through your doubts, because your doubts and your questions don't have to keep you from having faith. And when Jesus challenges Thomas, look at how Thomas responds. Thomas said to him, my Lord and my God. Now notice it doesn't say anything about Thomas actually putting his fingers in Jesus' hands or his hand in Jesus' side. My guess is he probably didn't need to at that point. It was enough to just see Jesus, and Thomas says, my Lord. And then for the first time, anyone using this language of Jesus, he says, my God. Then Jesus says this. Jesus told him, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Now, this might sound like a mild critique of Thomas, right? The only reason that you believe, Thomas, is because you saw. But I think Jesus is just reinforcing the idea. You don't have to see to believe. You don't have to have all of your questions and all of your doubts resolved to have faith. In fact, there's a lot of people who didn't get all their questions and doubts resolved, and they were able to have faith. And there's going to be a lot of people who come after you, Thomas, who will have questions and doubts, and many of them will believe. So here's what we learn from the story of doubting Thomas. I think there's four really important lessons. First, that Jesus knows our doubts and he meets us in them. So he knows what's on your mind. He knows what's in your heart. He knows that sometimes we doubt his goodness. We doubt that he hears our prayers. We doubt some of the stories in the Bible. He knows that we have doubts, and guess what? He's not offended by that. Jesus isn't disappointed in that. He's not shaking his head at us, hoping we'll just have more faith. He knows our doubts. And when we bring our doubts to him, Jesus will meet us there, just like he did with Thomas. Right? Sometimes Jesus will push us. Sometimes he'll challenge us. Sometimes Jesus will just sit with us in our doubts, until we realize that the thing we've been so focused on maybe isn't what we should have been focused on. Jesus knows your doubts and mine, and he meets us there. Second, we learn there's a difference between having doubts and having doubts rule. And this is what I would call the Easter difference. Let me get theological for just a second. Last week we said that when Jesus died on the cross and rose from the grave, he vanquished the powers of sin and death. I would add to that list, he vanquished the powers of fear, doubt, sorrow, and hopelessness. Which means for those of us who are followers of Jesus, he's in the process of making us new and whole again, and we don't live under the rule of doubt, fear, sorrow, and hopelessness. We'll still experience those things, but they don't rule over us. Now, maybe you're here today and you're not a follower of Jesus. And maybe that's because you still have a ton of doubts about God or Jesus or the Bible. And maybe you look around at other Christians that you know or when you come to church and you think they just have so much faith that I don't have. And I would just remind you of this. Faith is not the certainty or the absence of doubt. Faith is committing to an action in the face of uncertainty and doubt. And maybe that's all you need to do. Maybe you actually have more faith than you realize. Maybe you're not that different than Thomas. See, Thomas followed Jesus, but he still had doubts. He still had questions. He was a natural skeptic, but he stuck around. He didn't go home. He didn't leave Jerusalem. In fact, Thomas modeled for us something that is so huge for every single one of us, whether you're not a follower of Jesus or you've been a follower of Jesus your entire life. Here's what Thomas modeled, and this is the third thing. It's so important that the best response to doubt is to show up. It's just to show up. Here on Sundays, it's to show up in a community of faith that welcomes your doubts and your questions. Faith, when you're going through any tough season in life, any difficult questions or any significant doubts, faith might simply be just to show up, which is still hard, right? Our default when we're going through any tough season in life is to disengage. It's to pull back. It's to stay home. I think part of that is conscious because we think the only way I can show up is if I have everything all figured out first. I have to get my act together first. But a lot of time it's subconscious, right? We naturally pull back because it's uncomfortable to show up with doubts. It's vulnerable to show up with a lot of uncertainty. The problem, though, when we pull back is we actually isolate ourselves and we insulate ourselves from the very community that we need. We isolate ourselves and insulate ourselves from the places and spaces of faith that we actually need. Imagine if Thomas had disengaged. Imagine if he had pulled back, gone home. He never would have seen the risen Jesus. He never would have experienced what Jesus could do in his life. He never would have been a part of this movement that ended up changing the world. Church tradition says that Thomas eventually traveled to India and he told people about Jesus there, and that thousands, maybe millions of people's lives are different today because of what he did. See, the best response to doubt is not to pull back, but to actually lean in and show up. There's one final lesson, and this is for all of us as a community. The church should be full of doubters. Every single Sunday, it should be said of us here at New Denver Church, some worshiped, but some doubted. Wouldn't that be awesome? Every single Sunday, there should be some Thomases here who say, you know what? I love all you guys. I love what we're doing as a community. I'm glad that you welcome me as a part of this community. But just so you know, I don't really believe any of this, right? I'm going to need more evidence, and I'm probably never going to believe, right? Every single Sunday, we should have people showing up here who are singing these songs with gusto and some other people who are just mouthing the words because they're just not sure if they believe what they're saying. In fact, I would go so far as to say, if the church doesn't have doubters, it's not the church. See, wouldn't it be awesome if we were a community of faith? A community of people who are just stumbling forward in our faith, not in spite of our doubts, but because we showed up with our doubts. See, that's what the early church was. That's what we all need. And I think that's what our world desperately needs. Let me pray for us. God, we bring all of ourselves into this place this morning and into this community. I pray for those of us, particularly who are going through a difficult season, who are experiencing tough times, who are wrestling with tough questions, who are anxious, worried, afraid, tired, worn out. Whatever we bring into this place and into this space, God, I pray that you would meet us here, that we would know that you love us, that we would experience your presence, and that in those places where we doubt and we don't believe, God, I pray that you would just help us to believe and trust in you. I pray this in your name. Amen.